So, Dan, I have
yes.
Muppet adaptation news.
Ooh.
Not an actual Muppets adaptation, aww, but there's a news article that's been going around. Someone wrote a blog post that's mm-hmm. been getting a lot of attraction where they ranked every Academy Award for Best Picture by how good it would be if it were a Muppets, if the Muppets did an adaptation.
Okay.
And I wanted to get your take because I think their list is suspect because I think it's a funny list, but it's not actually considering the nuances of the Muppets and what would make a good Muppets adaptation.
Okay.
So we're just going to do the top 10.
The top 10.
Top 10 best
love
picture
it.
Winners that would
love
make
it.
Great Muppet films.
Okay.
And you guys can all find this on harddrive.net. I saw it linked on Reddit. So number 10 is The Departed.
The Departed with Muppets?
Yes, The Departed with Muppets.
Okay.
Like,
who do you put as the Matt Damon, Leo DiCaprio characters? Which Muppets look enough like each other? Or you just do Fozzie and Kermit and you can't tell them apart?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what you do.
Yeah.
Right? That one's interesting because like there's lots of cursing. So the Muppets cursing
mm-hmm.
would be interesting. But their number 9 is Titanic.
Quick question.
Okay.
Who do you put as Jack Nicholson?
Jack Nicholson in that one? Animal.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen The Departed.
Yeah.
Animal would kill that role.
Okay. Now, my problems with this list is, like, their top 10 are good top 10.
Mm-hmm.
I just think they're not in a good order because number 9 is Titanic.
Titanic would be a good one.
I think Titanic would be my number 2.
Okay.
Of best picture winners with the Muppets.
Mm-hmm.
The Titanic with Muppets would be amazing.
It would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can totally see that working. Who's the one human?
The one human
Billy
is...
Billy Zane?
What's that?
Billy Zane.
That would be funny. That would be good.
Deeply in love with Miss Piggy.
With Miss Piggy.
And then at the end, he's like, no, I need to save this chicken. Let me on the boat.
Yeah, I think that's a winner. All right. 8 is Kramer versus Kramer. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I think that gets a chuckle, but I don't think it'd actually be a...
I don't think it would actually be a fun movie. It's
like,
funny to think about
exactly
a very painful divorce between
yes.
Kermit and Piggy, but, I wouldn't want to actually watch it.
But Unforgiven, which is their number 7, is an awesome Muppets movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Muppets, dark, gritty Western, deconstructing, like, So,
well, I mean, when you mentioned the existence of this list, my first thought immediately went to No Country for Old Men with Muppets, which is what I would want to see.
But see, I think that wouldn't be that good of one.
Well, see, it's one of my all-time favorite movies.
About.
I think it would be fun.
They have number 6. I would rank as my number 3, which is Rocky.
Rocky
with the Muppets.
I don't know.
It would work.
Yeah, like, but would it benefit from being Muppetized?
Yes, because, you know, you have Apollo Creed be the human.
Okay.
And it's like this guy boxing Muppets is funny, right?
It is funny.
In fact, you have all the other boxers and, like, you have lots of humans. And then there's just Kermit training to beat this giant human being. And it's, you know, it's an underdog story. I think it'd be really fun.
I would use Gonzo instead.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
If only because then the scene where he has to chase a chicken around the alley would work better.
Number 5 on this list is The Deer Hunter, which I actually haven't seen.
The Deer Hunter, that's funny because it's an incredibly dark Vietnam kind of thing. Again, I don't know if it would be funny in practice.
Yeah.
Because it's a deeply tragic, gut-wrenching story.
Right, like... clear winner in all of these is Titanic. Titanic with the Muppets would just be funny, and it would be charming. Number 4, they have Everything Everywhere All at Once, which I think is just an awful mix with the Muppets.
Yeah, that wouldn't work.
It's already, like, the way they are juxtaposing the goofiness of, you know, googly eyes on rocks with the sincerity is already the same shtick.
Yeah.
It would make the Muppets work, and so you gain nothing.
Yeah. If you start with Muppets and then you cut to googly eyes on a rock, you haven't actually changed anything.
Yeah, exactly.
So.
Number 3 is their obvious big joke one, Schindler's List.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
That would be absolutely terrible.
Yeah, and that's where it clicked to me. All right, this list is about how funny it is to think of the Muppets.
Mm-hmm. Not how good they would actually be as movies.
Though number 2 is my number 1, even though it shouldn't. work The Godfather with Muppets.
No, see, that would kill. That would be amazing.
It would be really good.
That would be so good.
Yeah. So why would The Godfather with Muppets work when, like, Deer Hunter wouldn't? They're both kind of dark material. And dark material. Dark materials is, yeah. Like, why does one work and not the other?
Partly because Godfather is already so deep in the collective consciousness,
yeah,
that the audience would respond to it better. You know, the tiny handful of people who've seen The Deer Hunter, they would go and they'd say, oh, that's disturbing. And everyone else who's never seen The Deer Hunter would go to the movie and be like, this can't possibly be a real movie.
Right. I think also Godfather,
not be fun in any way.
You've got a lot of relationship dynamics, which the Muppets are good at.
Yeah.
And I mean, here's my pitch. So Marlon Brando, right?
Okay.
Swedish Chef.
Swedish Chef.
As your lead.
Well, I mean, he's not really the lead. It's Michael.
Yeah, I know.
That's the lead. But that works because you need the accent.
Yeah.
And he was doing the kind of cotton balls in the mouth thing. Swedish Chef would work. I was thinking Sam the Eagle. Swedish Chef is better.
Don't you think? Like,
yeah.
Nothing he says can you understand?
Mm-hmm.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
Right?
Plus the scene where he dies and he's out in his tomato garden, the tomatoes could talk. That would be so great.
Spoiler alert.
The other nice thing about The Godfather is there's a lot of drama, but there already is a lot of humor in it.
Yes.
And, you know, you've got Sonny, who's, you know, ne'er-do-well, goofball, and all these kinds of things. And not as much violence as people remember, because the really big violence scene is right at the end.
Yeah.
And so I think it would translate well. Man, Swedish Chef is The Godfather. That's perfect.
Isn't that?
That's good.
All right. Their number one completely, I mean, maybe it'd make my top 10. It's Lord of the Rings. I just don't know. It's just not there for me.
That one wouldn't work as well because it's a hat on a hat, as Seth Meyers says. It is two different, already fantastical, goofy things. You don't need that many fantastical, goofy things.
Now, here's the thing. If I were ranking these by the plausibility of the Muppets ever actually being able to do this, Titanic would be number one because they don't need the rights. They can just do their own version of Titanic.
Yeah.
But Lord of the Rings would be number two. Like, I think the Muppets could make a pitch for Lord of the Rings that possibly could get accepted.
More
they would never,
easily yeah. than they could pitch Godfather?
Yes. I think, like, if you went to the various property holders, I think both are a long shot, but
no. I think that whoever owns the Godfather rights, they would be like, yeah, I can totally see this.
Okay.
I think that that could work.
We need to start lobbying.
Yeah. I'm a little, I mean, I understand the list is Best Picture winners.
Yeah.
But that makes me sad because then you have to choose Rocky 1 instead of Rocky 4. Because Rocky 4 with Muppets, I can see that being amazing.
So, yeah, No Country for Old Men did make number 12 on their list.
Okay.
Braveheart was number 13.
See, I have watched No Country like 10 or 15 times. I love that movie. I can see it working with Muppets, even though I'm probably the only one in the audience that would enjoy it.
The best one, I think, on their list and the next 10 is Casablanca.
Casablanca with Muppets.
Muppets.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Huh. I'm trying to think of past Best Picture winners that would be awesome.
But anyway, we have a food heist. I'll just keep an eye out if we ever have other Muppet casting news.
Okay.
You know, I thought this would be nice.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. I dig it. Okay, so here's the deal with our food heist. This was sent in by Joshua Holmstead. Thank you very much. But it is paywalled. So I can read the part that says, truck driver trades $50,000 in lunch meat for crack. And then the little thing pops up. So I know this happened like 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
In one of the states with an A, Alabama or Arkansas.
I mean, if you're trading lunch meat for crack, that's a pretty good
Arkansas.
You could have guessed that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like, of course it's Arkansas.
Right.
Yeah. So a truck driver who was transporting lunch meat offloaded $50,000 worth of it in exchange for crack. I don't know how much, what the going exchange rate is between lunch meat and crack.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much crack he got for this.
Yeah.
The article won't let me know.
My guess is probably not enough.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good guess.
Trading anything for crack,
mm-hmm.
You're not getting enough crack. That's advice from Uncle Dan. So there's our food heist. Yeah.
You should have found a sequel food heist because we're talking about sequels and remakes today.
Ooh.
And so we should have found someone who stole something and then stole something again.
Yeah. And talking about sequels and remakes shouldn't come as a surprise because we just talked about Muppet remakes.
Yes.
For like 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
So sequels and remakes.
Sequels and remakes.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was chatting with my agent earlier this week, and he was talking about how we're getting pretty deep into the Stormlight Archive series, right? Releasing book 5, and you know, then we'll do book 6 through 10. And he was just talking about how much he enjoyed there being things like Tress and things like that that were more standalone-ish. But do those even count? Because they're in the same universe using a character that I had already established.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about the whole idea of sequels and remakes and standalones, and people are very down on sequels and remakes these days.
Well,
I feel.
In certain genres they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually just last week was having a big conversation with Dawn about this because I find it really interesting that, like, when it comes to movies, people will complain about remakes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're talking about, for example, stage performances,
yeah,
that's what you get.
Yeah, there's an entire Tony Award category based around Best Revival.
It is so hard. You know, if you're a theater owner and you're trying to get people to come to a brand new play that some dude just wrote, your theater is going to make way more money putting on Shakespeare or some other thing that people already know. You look at actors and, you know, you read their bios, and one thing they will always talk about is, oh, he played Hamlet, or, you know, she played Lady Macbeth. And the different ways that they bring out the character of Hamlet or Lady Macbeth or whoever, like, that's part of how we know they're a good actor.
Right.
Because their Hamlet was so interesting and vibrant. Whereas when it comes to movies, where, like, you know, and TV's the same, we don't want to see the same person play the same role that somebody else already played, because suddenly that's terrible.
That's a fascinating observation, Dan. Really interesting, because, like, you will see endless complaints of Hollywood is creatively bankrupt because they're doing remakes or sequels, whereas in the stage world, not a peep on that, which is obviously we need both, but really an interesting observation.
Well, and there's other artistic genres where the same thing happens. My wife and I went to the symphony last week.
Yeah.
And that was all just Richard Strauss and Prokofiev and all these people that have been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. And if you own a symphony hall and you try to get people to come to brand new piece that somebody wrote last year, that happens, but it's hard. People want to hear the stuff that they know. While we were at the symphony, they had a piece by Richard Strauss. And, you know, in the program, they were talking about his life. And his father didn't like the kind of music that Strauss was writing.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was a time when people were making the adjustment kind of out of the Romantic period into whatever came after that. He was very influenced by Wagner and Liszt. And his father was like, no, you need to write like Beethoven. And the quote from his father, and I find this incredibly interesting, was true greatness, and this I'm paraphrasing this, great art does not require experimentation. And
wow,
you can see that in every form of art and in every period of history. You've got your traditionalists who are like, nope, please do not write a brand new symphony. I just want to hear Beethoven or Mozart or whatever, but that music exists because someone in a previous generation experimented with form and style and stuff.
In writing, I use the phrase strange attractor sometimes in writing education, which is something that I borrowed from Terry Rossio that he may have borrowed from somewhere else. Terry Rossio being a famous screenwriter, Aladdin is one of he and his writing partner's scripts, Pirates of the Caribbean. And he talks about this push and pull between the familiar and the strange, with the idea of the strange attractor, where You want something that is strange in some way, but is also attractive and familiar in some way. And the best pitches, this is an essay on pitching, is something that is combining the two, that is giving you a new experience and a familiar experience. And kind of there's this idea in writing that every genre and subgenre within that genre and every kind of form has its own expectations of how much will be the strange and how much will be the attractor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been really fascinating for me to look at the romance genre novels that are selling well on Amazon, because they will often list in their descriptions, we've mentioned it before, what the ending is.
Mm-hmm.
Your first sentence is, this is a happily ever after with no cheating. That's like the lead, so that people know what they're getting. And then
mm-hmm.
this strange is, well, she's this different job and he's this different job, things like that. And so
yeah.
in that genre, the familiar is far more weighted than in, you know, what I expect
yeah.
from a lot of the books that I'm picking up. And there's no value judgment here. It's just really fascinating to me
mm-hmm.
that's more like stage play, right? That's more like, I know I'm going to go see The Foreigner again because I love The Foreigner and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Versus strange experimental play
yeah.
that I've never heard
that
of.
We've never heard of. Like, this is a weird example to make because we just ate a bunch of ice cream without knowing what flavor it was. But
we did that 2 weeks ago, Dan.
I know.
Yeah.
We consume media differently than food. Everyone out there who's like, why would you possibly want to know the ending of a book before you read it? What would be the point of reading it? It's mm-hmm. because you enjoy that flavor, right?
Right.
You buy ice cream based on the flavor. It is extremely rare that you would buy ice cream and you want to be surprised by it. Please just buy whatever. And when I get to the bottom of the carton, then I'll figure out what flavor this was.
I think you'll find a lot of people in the comments who'll say, you know what? I like to try new flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. But at the same time, I think like I've tried a lot of flavors and I know which are my favorite flavors. And I will, at an ice cream shop, almost assuredly order one of those.
Yeah.
Even though I'm perfectly happy to do this whole taste test thing and enjoyed it a lot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to get my pralines and cream.
We have our favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this for years. I don't think I've ever said it on the show. When people talk about how they are sick of remakes, what I want is a remake of Knight Rider. But I want a very specific remake. I want the exact scripts of the original 1980s Knight mm-hmm. Rider, just with a new cast, new production team, new everything. Treat it as if it were Hamlet, and just give me a modern reinterpretation of the same script. I think that would be fascinating.
You know, I can think of only one case where that's ever happened, and I've always wondered why it hasn't ever happened again. It's the movie Airplane.
Mm.
You familiar with the history of the movie Airplane?
Yeah.
That it was, they got a script for a film that had already been made. They took that script with mild tweaks and filmed it as is, just with some of their jokes added in. And Airplane is hilarious, right?
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder why we haven't seen more comedy films do that, take a script. We talked about the Muppets. That's kind of what they do
mm-hmm.
or did several times.
Yeah.
Why haven't we seen more of that? Why haven't we seen someone say, I'm going to take the exact script, make a few tweaks, or, you know, we have seen like the remake where it's like, we're going to do a shot for shot remake of Psycho.
Got a right? shot for shot.
Which is an interesting experiment, but.
But it's really just an experiment,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole point of seeing Hamlet more than once is you want to see how this new cast or this new director interprets Hamlet. If it's an identical recreation, yeah,
exactly.
Why does it exist?
And this is why I have never, and I think we've talked about it on the podcast before, understood why everyone hates the new Disney remake so much online. Obviously, people go to see them. So,
mm-hmm.
but when you go to the certain circles of the internet that I frequent,
mm-hmm.
Disney remakes are a sign that Disney is creatively bankrupt. These should not exist. These are offenses. Right. But I actually have really enjoyed watching several of the adaptations go from animation to live action and see what different things they do. I think they've rarely gotten the balance right. Most
yeah.
of them have been kind of disasters mm-hmm. in one way or another. But I still uphold that Aladdin worked really well in live action.
I haven't seen that one.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the Jungle Book one.
Yeah.
I think that the remake of Beauty and the Beast is one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life.
And see, I didn't go see it because I heard that from everyone.
Yeah.
Why is that? Like, I agree. The Jungle Book remake worked really well. I think that the Aladdin remake, not quite as good, mm-hmm. but like worked really well. I can tell you why after. But tell me why.
So Beauty and the Beast, I have a different perspective on than a lot of people mm-hmm. because my friend Meg Lloyd
yeah.
is a professional animator, works in Hollywood. She directs Lower Decks, things like mm-hmm. that. She sat down with me and some other friends, and we watched the entire movie together with her pausing every now and then to say, now look at this, look at this. And it becomes really obvious that the modern remake just simply loses most of the magic. Things don't read as well. All of the little household objects like Lumiere, the candelabra, he barely has a face. Mm-hmm. They are, for the most part, completely expressionless because they're trying to be very photorealistic about mm-hmm. them instead of cartoony. And so the emotion is just visually drained out of the movie, regardless of how good the acting may or may not be.
See, why is it that we have that response, like, when we've talked about the theater, where like I have seen better and worse productions of certain things, but I mm-hmm. wouldn't call it draining the life out of it, right? I wouldn't use phrasing like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I would agree with you, having seen the Mulan remake, I thought the Mulan remake was terrible. I wouldn't phrase it as draining the life out. I just say it's a bad film that mm-hmm. doesn't work, but it was really bad. So why are we so harsh on these when we aren't on a stage play like yeah. you've brought up?
Well, in this particular case, it's because of the change of medium. They're mm-hmm. both films, but one is animated and one is, mm-hmm. I guess, carefully computer animated. One is stylistically cartoon and the other is stylistically photorealistic, which changes, like I said, just the way that we observe it, the way that we receive it. And so with that comparison in my head, I'm suddenly watching something where all the colors are more dull than what I remember, and all of the faces are more flat than I remember. Mm-hmm. And that's where that particular phrase comes from. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I went and saw a production of, you know, Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum that was full of really dull wooden actors, might have the same kind of reaction to it.
Might. A lot of people might make the argument they didn't take enough chances to make it different. Mm-hmm. But they did take huge chances in several of these adaptations
yeah.
that were bad. The Mulan one's an example.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different sort of tone and feel, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Whereas Aladdin, the one that I do like, mm-hmm. was basically the same script.
I think Aladdin is a good example of taking chances that worked mm-hmm. because you can't redo that Robin Williams performance.
Right.
That performance warped animated films,
mm-hmm.
and we are still in the new environment that his performance created. Getting Will Smith to go in and kind of very purposefully not be Robin Williams, to do a completely different yeah. everything, that was a chance that I think, like you say, kind of paid off.
You haven't seen it, right?
I have not.
Yeah, and we've talked about it before because that's kind of mm-hmm. the point that I've made. I mean, I think it worked. I enjoyed his performance as Genie because you're right. He mm-hmm. did not try to do Robin Williams, and it gave a very different type of Genie, which
yeah.
really made that movie work for me.
And, you know, that's the have you seen Patrick Stewart's Hamlet kind of question. Like,
yeah.
what other actors would I want to see do the Genie? And yeah. what would they bring to it that would be mm-hmm. completely different? Well, now I'm thinking about that. Who do I want to see play the Genie?
I want to see the Hot Fuzz guy. What's his name?
Simon Pegg. No, Nick Frost.
Nick Frost, huh?
Yeah. Nick Frost doesn't get the credit he deserves, in my opinion. He's the heart and soul of all those movies. I want to see a singer do it.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
You know,
Donny Osmond.
The old stoner guy, I was going to say the old stoner guy from Rolling Stones. That's everyone from the Rolling Stones. The one that Johnny Depp was basing his performance off of?
Keith Richards.
Like a Keith Richards
okay.
Genie mm-hmm. or a Willie Nelson Genie. Like
oh, Willie Nelson
old
Genie.
Old stoned guy. I can see that.
Snoop.
Snoop. Yes.
Yeah.
That
he's got the charisma.
Fun. Yeah.
I'm not even joking on that one. Snoop is the genie.
No, I'm with you completely. He would he would give a wonderful performance as genie.
Snoop is genie. All right, Hollywood, make it happen. Do another Aladdin.
Another Aladdin.
So why did the new Top Gun work? Where almost every attempt to do the same thing with a old legacy property, bringing it forward to the nude audience. The nude audience?
The new nude audience. Audience.
The new audience.
There's some movies that work really well with a nude audience.
Why have none of the others worked?
I think one thing that the new Maverick did, the new Top Gun did, was they kept the same tone. Mm-hmm. It was not a modern remake where we are parodying the original or trying to fix the cultural problematic elements with the original. It's just, hey, if you liked one, you will like two because they're the same tone throughout.
And they aren't really, but New Maverick is what we all thought the old one was.
Yeah.
So I agree with you and disagree at the same time. I do think that too many of these, one of their goals seems to be to out with the old, in with the new, at the expense of the old.
Yeah.
And so they're making a sequel where Indiana Jones is old and washed up and unloved and a bad parent and, you know, like doing things like that, even if at the end he gets to have adventure and things, like it's really sour. But same thing, like Maverick has not gone far. He's not, but for some reason that movie doesn't feel like it's like, look at this loser Maverick, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of these legacy sequels seem to be like, look at this loser that you all used to love. Mm-hmm. Look at Luke Skywalker. He's a loser now.
He's a loser.
Isn't that great?
See, I think a lot of this stems back to the Brady Bunch remake. That's the first one that I remember, at least, that said, hey, we're going to bring back this nostalgic thing, but we're going to make fun of it.
Yeah.
And that worked for Brady Bunch because everyone made fun of the Brady Bunch. It is kind of an inherently silly show.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, there's nobody who has based their personality around the Brady Bunch. There's nobody out there who grew up to become an architect because the dad on the Brady Bunch was an architect, right? Whereas, you know, I studied archaeology in college because of Indiana Jones. There's that element of personal connection to it that some properties have and some properties don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it feels like they think they're being respectful, but they don't know how to be. That's like Hollywood execs don't know how to be respectful. They don't have that capacity. And so they can only, like, imitate it.
They can fake respect.
I know some Hollywood execs who are very nice people, I should say. And so I say that a little, but I think the machine has trouble with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
The whole Hollywood machine has trouble with how to walk that line between letting someone have a life and grow and change and just ruining everything.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they just ruin everything.
Yeah. Spider-Man's a great example of this. His whole gimmick was that he's your age. You're a kid reading comic books. This guy's a kid, too. He goes to high school.
Mm-hmm.
The girl he likes doesn't like him back. Like, all of this stuff. And he was perpetually a teenager for decades.
Yep.
And then they're like, okay, we're going to let him get married. I think it was only very recently that he had a kid. Imagine if Spider-Man had grown at the same rate as his audience. I'm not saying this would have been a good thing. But it would be interesting to watch that character go through every stage of life in one continuous story.
Yeah, the Harry Potter thing where he aged with the audience. That would be interesting. That couldn't really have worked with Spider-Man just because of the way the Silver Age was and who it was targeted at.
Yeah.
I think you'll get some complaints in the in the comments about this from the hardcore comic book aficionados because, you know, Spider-Man got married.
He did.
And then they decided that didn't sell, so they came up with infamously one of the worst reboots in comics history where the devil negated his marriage and took the memories away so that he could go back to being unmarried Peter Parker again because they're mm-hmm. like, well, we don't know what to do with him now that he's married.
Well, so. And comics are such a different mm-hmm. animal altogether. It's almost not fair to bring him up. I remember when I was a kid in the 80s reading some article by some old school comic reader who mm-hmm. said, when I was a kid, Spider-Man was a kid. And now I'm an adult with a family and responsibilities and a job, and Spider-Man's still a kid. Like, I have aged out of him. Mm-hmm. And I find that to be a really interesting thing. But that only really comes up with one of these long properties. You mentioned Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do want to bring up, you know, the book side of this sequels and remakes idea. You know, right now they've announced that they want to make a new Harry Potter. I can't remember if it's a new movie series or a TV show.
I thought it was television.
Whatever it is. And people are up in arms about that. But a lot of those people reread the Harry Potter books all the time, which for me is I'm going to go see Hamlet again. Right. Mm-hmm. Here's this thing I love. Here's this flavor I like to taste. I'm going to go back to it. And you know, this case, it becomes a case, I think, of ownership. I love this book because it is the same every time. I don't want to see a new interpretation of it.
I think I'm going to offer a different perspective.
Okay.
Kind of to bookend this. Maybe the reason we accept it and love it in theater is because theater is meant to be ephemeral. It is an experience that you have and that you don't hold on to. Whereas a book, you don't need a remake of the book
mm-hmm.
because the original experience is still available to you. I can't go back to the first time I saw The Foreigner and relive that experience
yeah.
when I saw it and had never seen it before and it was delightful. But I can go see different interpretations of mm-hmm. that experience. But I can go back and reread a book or watch a film, and maybe that's the differentiating
factor.
I
think that's a really good point to bring up.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but that makes a lot of sense. I want to experience Ben again for the very first time.